Hello and welcome to Talking Crit with Bad Mike, North Texas RPG Con.
Bad Mike.
The Blinker. The Mad! The Blinker that blinks at midnight. And myself, Eric Tenkar. We'll be talking about the normal bags of shit. And not so much bags of shit in the hobby. But,
And Mike, we can preview the next few weeks when we'll be back to special guests.
Yeah.
I mean, so the thing about Eric and I is we don't care if we have special guests or not. We love special guests.
Yes.
But if you see us on here without special guests, it's not like we called up 10 people and they all said no. It was because we didn't really have time to get a special guest, or we just didn't think about it in time.
Or the schedule's have people that want to be on the show, but their schedules. Sure. Unlike Mike and I, where we're like, we've penciled out every Wednesday
evening. What else we got going? Nothing.
Yeah, to yabber with you all.
Nothing at all.
Yeah. In my case, I was like, Mike and I are doing Talking Crit tonight. She's like, do we have time to watch another episode of The Hunters on Amazon Prime? I'm like, well, being that the episodes are just over an hour long, maybe half an episode. We'll come back to it after the podcast. Which, by the way, is something that I started watching back when I was initially sick and I could not get into it. I watched like an episode and a half and said, screw it. And now I'm watching it and I'm going, wow, this is pretty good. And I'm
sober. There's a fun 70s vibe to it. It's absolutely batshit crazy show.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's nuts. It's about Nazi hunters in 70s New York, but it goes off the rails. It's like way speculative, but it's still fun because my wife and I love anything 70s that really does a good job.
It does a good job.
Definitely does.
And, the subway scene, I was like, oh my God, I remember subways when they looked this bad.
Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. It was 70s. Yeah. That was 40 years ago. Yeah, there was. New York City was synonymous with yikes. It's scary.
Yeah, it was when you would drive through the South Bronx and across Bronx Expressway, and all you would see are either burned out buildings or the wreckage of buildings, and go, man, I just don't want to get stuck here.
Is it all gentrified now?
Back to a lot of it is, but or a lot of it was. Some parts of it are.
Hello, Charlie.
Are less so, but it is what it is.
I'm going to throw out there, I will be blinking a lot tonight. I have developed allergies on the beach, so I guess I'm not meant for the beach life. This will be our fourth week on the beach. We have to come back, unfortunately. Sadly, we have to come back. I'm going to lose my bronze tan. But I have developed an allergy to something in the air down here in the last week or so, and I've been taking allergy medicine, but I cannot stop blinking. So I am sorry if it's distracting. I would have worn my sunglasses, but I lost them the other day, so I lost my sunglasses. Can't wear my sunglasses, otherwise I'd look really, really cool and had sunglasses on. So
you aren't like blinking to try to pick somebody up, right? You're not like that.
Doing,
like,
that's not like a Morse code.
Yeah,
Charlie.
I'd like to tell you.
I'm gonna send you a message, Charlie.
There you go. And Mr. Bloodworth is here.
But anyway, so back to we'll sidetrack a lot. We hex crawl this thing, but
yes.
For those who don't know. We do have guests next two shows penciled in. Can we say who the guests are yet?
Or? Joe the Lawyer should be on, I believe, next Wednesday. And
Joe's always fun.
And Joe and I are going to be starting a Friday night live stream. It's going to be every second and fourth Friday of the month, tentatively called Iron Rations, because when you bought it, you usually bought 2 weeks worth.
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to say we're going to taste great, but we will certainly give you sustenance throughout the week.
It'll be fun. I love Joe's comments he leaves for you, and you and Joe will that'll be fun. It's going to be a good time.
Yeah, so Joe should hopefully be on the show next week, and Tim Conley, Benchley Dale Academy. Currently have penciled in for 2 weeks from today. Tim is somebody who was involved with the new TSR when it came out. Pretty much is very much an old school gamer. I gamed with him when he was out in Long Island and had a blast. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, he's been doing this Bench of Dale thing for a while. I've read his Facebook post for years now. It looks really, really fun. Yeah, so I'm really interested in having Tim on there too. That's gonna be fun.
We have other guests that are, I'm gonna say, we're not gonna name them, but they are penciled in with the date to be determined, which means
we have a lot of people say, yeah, I'd love to be on your show, but we just haven't finalized anything.
Right. These are actually people, not only just with like real jobs.
They're real people too, not imaginary people.
They're real people who you will all know and love. And hell, I'm just flattered that we've got the yes, I'd love to be on your show. No, I can't give you a date yet because I was just going to put together.
That's better than hell no, I don't want to be on your show ever.
Yes, you know, it's like, oh, I've seen the two of you, and as intimidating as you are.
That train wreck, I am not jumping on.
I don't want to be a part of that. So, as usual, the prep for Mike and I, and this was about 5 minutes. But one thing, but I shouldn't say that, because we've been prepping inadvertently throughout the week.
We do send messages every once in a while.
Yeah.
We talk to each other.
A lot of it is, holy shit, did you just see this Facebook post about yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And I think the big news today, or at least this week, the news of the week, we should have theme music for this, by the way, because Wizards of the Coast seems to always come up on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm.
Watsy's fuck up of the week.
Yes.
We have music for that. Wah, wah, wah.
Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. I'm not hoping. There were a couple of Tasha's releases, but I believe this is the latest one. Uh-huh. A large number of the books have been physically defective, is the best way to put it. Or, as some collectors have put it, totally uncollectible and a waste of my money.
Right. And there was a thread on this. I tried to contact some of the people on the thread. It didn't have enough lead time to contact it. I did contact somebody else I know and trust in the industry and asked them if they'd heard anything about this. They said they have 4 copies and they're in perfect shape. And so they suggested it was a batch issue, which could be true, which means that, because I know working for Frog Guy, we had the same issues. So sometimes you get a bad batch comes through, and usually it's regional. It'll be like all the ones in Texas or all the ones on the East Coast type of thing. I don't know if that's true or not, but there has been a huge amount of complaints about the printing quality of Tasha. And we saw the pictures. Basically, the issue you got is the binding is wavy. You get wavy pages, which is a binding issue.
Right. It's not something that you're going to blame on UPS or the Postal Service. They didn't fuck it up. This is stuff that came off the printing press, and for one reason or another, they looked warped, basically what it comes down to. But not warped in the, like, I just remembered I left my gaming books in the basement for 10 years.
Right.
And oh, yeah, we had the flood. Time for me to check on my books type of deal. As it, more like, you know, you left your gaming book in the bathroom as you showered.
Yeah, humidity got into it. It kind of did that little wave. I'm trying to find a book here to demonstrate, but I don't have anything here near me that's even close to where I mean, these are all actually, these are Frog Eye books. They're all in good, great shape. But yeah, it's one of those things, if you want a perfect copy, you're going to have a hell of a time finding a perfect copy. And from what I heard, retailers were told that the run was going to be reprinted. And really? Because there were so many complaints from retailers who got a whole case of them, and every one of them had the waviness in it.
But now, retailers being told they're going to reprint it doesn't necessarily mean that consumers are going to get their money back.
No, it doesn't mean that at all. And so I know people have ordered off Amazon, and the problem is Amazon will take returns for about anything. So they've returned it. The problem is they're on return number 3 or 4 at this point, and they're getting the exact same type of book back. So they're getting not diminishing returns, they're just getting the same book over and over again. So it's very frustrating for them. They're not getting a book that doesn't have the waviness.
Right.
So yeah, and we've seen this problem before with some major releases in the last few years. It's funny how all the books we used to get back in the day were all in great shape. There was some fiascos. I don't know if you remember, but the first printing of Unearthed Arcana is famous for basically falling apart. The pages just fell out of the book, which is why there was a second printing. And you can almost always tell there's not a lot of first printing Unearthed Arcanas out there still because they've fallen apart
over the years. I think the spine of mine is gone.
And really bad binding. That first print, there was something up, and so that this isn't a new problem. It didn't happen a lot back in the day, but yeah, there's. I want to say it might have been Oriental Adventures that also had some issues with the hardcover. But TSR's had some. I remember their splat books. They had some bad issues with some of the splat book printings that came out in the late 80s, early 90s.
I had one that the glue just didn't.
Yeah, the glue just together. Pop off. You have a cover in one hand and the book in the other hand.
Yeah, it's like I've got the first 30 pages here and the last 90 pages here. What am I gonna do? It's not like you could go. Well, not that I would even bother today. I wouldn't bother rebinding anything. But it was kind of like, and it is buyer beware, because especially back then, as a consumer, what were you going to do? Take it back to where you bought it from? Especially if it happened 6 months down the line. Mm-hmm. Happened to your first 6 days, sure, you can probably bring it back to B. Dalton's or Barnes & Noble or Dalton Books. Oh, my God. I'm really dating myself.
All the old names for the – well – A piece of duct tape used to just help us out back then. I mean, we would use books that were falling apart. We didn't care. We would just stick duct tape on it. I had a guy who used to re-sew his books. He would sew them. And so, we went to all these different lengths just to keep the books going, because as long as the pages turned and it, was in reasonable good shape, we could use it. So nowadays people are much, much pickier about what they get. Which, it's a right as a consumer to be that way. I mean, you want to get your money's worth.
But you know what still blows my mind? Is that the initial Facebook poster, if I remember correctly, I got 3 copies and they all look like this. And I was like, why are you buying? I can understand buying 2. You can use one as a quote collectible and one as a play copy. Somebody else bought 4. But here's my thoughts on it, okay? Nothing that you're buying from Wizards of the Coast these days is going to be fucking collectible 20 years down the line. Not unless they're going to all fall apart and you're going to say, well, the first print, 90% was shit, and if you got that 10%, you got money in the bag. All right, maybe. But otherwise, it's all mass-produced schlock. I'm not saying the quality of what's inside is bad. But there's not going to be a secondary market for this stuff. I think we saw that market, even with comic books and baseball cards, collapse under its own weight.
Well, there's a market in the short term, which is interesting, because the person I talked to had bought 4 copies. And that's why they said, oh, all my 4 copies were great. And I'm like thinking, why are you buying 4 copies? But the problem is these books have been – the latest WotC books have been selling out. I mean, they're sold out. Like you can't get any more. And so they're buying them for friends, or they're buying them to make this person I talked to wasn't buying for resale. They don't need the money.
Right.
But you might be buying it for your friends. You know, hey, my friends, maybe by the time they get around to buying it, they're going to be sold out. Cause that has happened with a few recent books, but more the special printings than the regular printings. But there's been a lot of special printing stuff that has sold out.
And all right, and special print things I can see, because they're generally a limited run. But if it's something that's being, dare I say, mass produced, if it's something that you cover price $49, Amazon has it for $26 with a $5 coupon, like Tash's was going for, or something like that. It was ridiculously low in price. Those, 3 copies or 4 copies, if you're getting them for collectible reasons. I just don't. I don't see it.
You see that a lot. Like I said, the WotC books, and there's a few that are out of print now. Some of the earlier WotC collections that go for quite a bit of money now. Like I said, but that's short term. Maybe people thinking in the short term, this is something that I'd like to speculate on, and
maybe just
flip it for double price.
Oh, especially if you're getting it at Amazon for half cover.
Sure, if you get it for cheap at Amazon,
And then you can So I'm getting a $50 book for $25. I can flip it for $40, and I had free shipping on it anyway. I've made $15. I can see the science behind it. I just think it's a lot of effort for nickel and dime profits.
Now this is it. This comes on the heels of a few other WotC mishaps. I mean, but I was real quick just went through my mind was the Pathfinder had some horrific printing issues with their 2.0 book.
Oh yeah,
where they had to basically redo the entire print run. I mean, they were bad issues. I mean, the books just fell to pieces, and we're talking a fairly expensive book. So this is something you definitely want to nip in the bud. If you do have a problem, you want to make sure that, you know, it doesn't get out that they're putting out defective books, because you're putting out expensive books. These are pricey books. You don't want somebody dropping, you know, $50 on something that's going to fall apart 2 weeks after they, you know, get out of the bookstore.
And you know, usually when it comes to something like that, it is, and again, I'm not saying this is happening in this case, it's usually because a change of printers or the printer changed where they're sourcing their material from.
Right.
Everybody's trying to maximize a profit. And if you can save 50 cents per book over the course of 10,000 books, you're saving $5,000. It's significant savings. Don't get me wrong. When you're in, none of these companies are making a huge amount of money, which brings to bring up another topic later, I think, when it comes to rumors about Wizards of the Coast that have been floating around a little bit. But the problem is you take a gamble when you change where you're sourcing something from. Because once you know, in this case, I have a good printer. I know that I'm not going to have more than the usual number of defects. Mm-hmm. Oh, I can save, you know, a dollar a book if I print it through XYZ. I'll only go through XYZ, and then you got to replace 20% of your print run. That money that you saved,
yeah, you're not saving it. No. And the dirty little secret of the printing industry is almost all printing is done in China. It's just got the best rates, the cheapest rates. The problem with printing in China this year is because of the COVID crisis. The Chinese factory shut down for months, you know, or at least weeks. I mean, for quite a while, and then everything got backed up, and the shipments that come over by boat, I mean, take forever. That's been a big issue. I don't know where WotC does a printing. I would suspect somewhere in China or China.
I'd actually have to buy one of their recent books and look to see print it in. But since I don't buy them because I don't really play 5e. Again, not a bad system, just not a system that I feel comfortable running with. And if I'm going to play it, all I need is the player's handbook as a player.
So
I'm probably good.
So we had. The rumors. I don't know where the rumors came from. Is this? Did you start this rumor?
I didn't start the. Fire. I see V2, is a website that you go to a lot to find out how sales are in the industry, what's going up, it hits the retailers, sales and all stuff. Hey, David, how you doing? Thanks for joining us. It is a great site for that stuff, and they had an article basically saying that with no named sources. I mean, the source could have been the writer of the article, throwing out the is Wizards of the Coast for sale?
Right.
And Mike and I have solicited opinions from people bit more knowledgeable in the industry than either one of us are individually. And I've also spitballed it. Because I've seen people say, the only company that in the hobby that could probably afford Wizards of the Coast is Paizo. No. Okay. And I'm going to tell you from what I've heard over, at least as of 2 years ago, the Paizo MMORPG was a huge, huge money sink for Paizo, and took what, you know, basically we made a profit, put it into the MMO. And what happened was, rumors have it, and I am not saying this is definite, this is rumors, but rumors had it that Alisa Stevens was writing payroll checks from her own personal checking account for a while because the Paizo Till was bare. This is right, I believe, right before 2.0 came out. It was, or at least, or 2.0 was announced. I think it was, yeah. I think it was right before the 2.0 announcement, which probably didn't help either when your current market of Pathfinder 1 books are no longer going to be earning you money when people go, oh, we're abandoning the system. You know, but she doesn't have the money. However, and I will say this, if somebody could get a coalition together or get private investors, because you'd probably need private equity funds to grab Wizards of the Coast, especially if you bring Magic the Gathering along with it. Somebody like Lisa would probably be somebody you'd want in organizing that. But again, I have no inside information on that one. Okay, PFO was a complete disaster. The game sucked. Mm-hmm. Nowhere near complete when it launched. I don't think, listen, yeah. When it launched, my understanding is it was barely an alpha. It wasn't even a beta. Yeah. But they had to get it out because they had promised product. Backers wanted it. But here's the thing that people forget, too. When this was pushed on Kickstarter, and I believe the funding goal was $1 million, the reality is $1 million did not fund that game. Okay?
No.
What $1 million basically funded a proof of concept, which is what the players got. It is $1 million was supposed to get it ready to get investors to come in and go, woohoo! And the problem is Pathfinder is certainly well known amongst RPGers and D&D players, but it doesn't have the same kind of marketability that the D&D trademark does. Dungeons and Dragons doesn't have that.
Right. When Eric and I talk about how nobody makes any money in the gaming industry except for three or four or five people, Lisa Stevens is one of those three or four or five people. She yeah. had the money to write the check to do this, but it's highly unusual in this industry. But that's and probably shouldn't have written the check, it just turns out, because that thing just crashed and burned. I mean, it just didn't work. And most video games, there's some successful companies out there, you know, like Bethesda and, you know, EA Sports, stuff like that. They are able to keep going because they are building off every release is paying for the release next year. And they have lead times of years. I mean, yep. Skyrim, which my one of my favorite games ever, takes that each edition of Skyrim takes like 7 or 8 years to program. I mean, that's how long it takes to get those games out. A little company that only has one or two games can't afford that. They can't afford really any missteps. They can't. No. They have to get the game out and make the money. And so they usually do it in parts. They're doing, you know, this part, then they get some more funding. They do another part. They get some more funding, do another part. They're not like these big game companies that can just churn these out. Not really churn out, but they have a plan. I mean, like I said, Bethesda Games does Fallout, they do Skyrim, and they take years and years and years, and they have people work full-time on these games. Most game companies aren't like that. The smaller ones are not like that at all. That they contract a game, and they pay for it, and sometimes games, and a lot of our friends that went from TSR to the Coleco and gaming industry back in the 80s and 90s, they worked for years on projects, and I think Janelle Jaquez told me about a project she worked on for years. It just went belly up after like 3 or 4 years. Nothing. I mean, they worked and worked and worked and did coding and everything, and after about 3 years, like, yep, it's not going to work. We don't have the funding. So it wasn't surprising that didn't make it, because as you said, Eric, it just doesn't have the name recognition. I bet it was really hard to get funds for that. To get that going. Now, if it had been a D&D one,
right,
with Dungeons and Dragons in the name and behind it, I think you'd have seen something different with that. But
you know, and part of the issue is, and this is not uncommon in our hobby, there are people, and I'm not going to name names, but if you've been following stuff the last couple of years, you'll figure this one out pretty easily, that are well known in our hobby, have are of great repute for their abilities to create, even though most of their creations were years ago. Mm-hmm. And they bank on their reputation to drive sales or drive backing for a product or a project. And here's the issue with that. Yes, within your niche of gaming, you are a demigod. But outside of that niche of gaming, if we're talking character levels, you're barely a veteran. Maybe you're level four. I mean, people go, oh, yeah, I know John Smith. Wasn't he involved in SRT, WTSR? Yeah, yeah, the first company that, you know, published Dungeons and Dragons for the first time in the late 80s. You mean 1973, 74? Oh, well, yeah, well, maybe. I think I know who you're talking about. I mean, they don't know. These, yeah. You know, they, so, again, it's one thing to be a big fish in a small pond, but once you leave that small pond and you try to get money from the Great Lakes, you realize that you don't have the influence you have. And I think that we all think, my God, Paizo, no, Paizo is, you know, yes, they have the money where they can have a payroll. Steve Jackson Games can actually have warehouse staff, you know, and people that are on staff as creators, and that's great, but they don't have the money to buy a trademark. Remember, Dungeons and Dragons has more value as a trademark.
Well, not only that, if you saw Dungeons & Dragons sold, here's what you're not going to see sold with it. Magic's not going to be sold with it. Magic the Gathering.
No.
And Pokemon. All that's the Pokemon stuff? No. They make Dungeons & Dragons numbers look silly. The numbers for Magic and stuff like the card games like Pokemon, stuff like that. That makes D&D numbers look just ludicrous.
Right.
Those would not go. Those would stay. Those would be broken off, and those are going to stay with Hasbro no matter what. Hasbro's never letting those go. They're just not going to. So what you're basically for a sale, I think what you're looking at is D&D, anything D&D related or Dungeons & Dragons related, probably the board game stuff, anything like that. And I you know, it's just the person I talk to is pretty
wired in.
We have our connections. Yeah, Eric, yeah. We do have connections. Yes, very wired in, and off the record did tell me that this doesn't look like it's going to happen because of various reasons Eric and I talked about, but just mainly because right now it's just a bad time to – it's really a bad time to sell this. I mean,
right. They're not going to get maximum value. COVID is just
making everything not really work the way it's supposed to be working. Normally, if you came out and said, yeah, we're going to sell Dungeons & Dragons, you get some huge bids and some huge interest. But right now, everybody's kind of turtling in. They're waiting to see what happens. Is there going to be a vaccine next year? Are we going to have jobs next year?
Yeah.
We're still going to have virtual cons going through 2021. Because make no mistake, in-person cons drive a lot of sales and a lot of interest and stuff. If you have virtual cons for another year, people are going to be pulling back even farther, I think, because it cuts into your bottom dollar because it's advertising. It's advertising.
It is.
There's a lot of issues connected with virtual.
Well, and here's the thing. The thing about conventions is that a lot of people, you know, especially non-convention goers, maybe don't always realize this, but you get FaceTime, you get shake the hand of people in the industry who, when I was a younger gamer, I would have, you know, shat my pants if like Frank Metzner or Tim Kaff actually knew who I was. Oh my, you know, fucking God. But you get to meet these people at conventions. I mean, when my one Gen Con, I got to meet the Kevin Ciambata and Kevin Long from Palladium at the time. And I picked up Rifts and had it signed by the team. And Dale Slade Henson of TSR, because he was running the Spelljammer model combat and had to go take a leak and asked me to cover for him. And then came back a half an hour later with a soda and I had to a smoke break, I think. But, you know, these are people whose names that you recognize from the products. Well, a lot of these people don't do things like this. They don't do live streams. They don't do interviews online, but they do go to conventions. And they go to conventions for a few perks. They aren't large perks, but generally speaking, Free admission, free room, and free food. And get to, I hate to say it like this, but bask in the adulation of their fans. But again, it's our pond, right? So we know the big fish in our pond, and we want to spend time with them. And you don't have that physical ability, that connection to to meet and greet these people.
I'm going to say the sales, face-to-face, everything, because, I mean, let's face it, I mean, WotC didn't show up for any conventions last year because there hadn't been any, and I don't think their sales have suffered necessarily. It's just that, especially when you get to the lower tier or mid tier game companies, they really rely on FaceTime is very important to shake hands and talk to people and demonstrate your game. I mean, there's a lot of sales made after, you know, once games are played and or just at the table. Eric and I have worked the table at Frog Guy Games. We know how that works. People come up and they're curious about this, this, and this. You talk to them for 5 minutes and boom, they walk away with $100 worth of books.
I mean, I ran a session of Swords and Witcher Light for a 5e table at GaryCon. They weren't expecting it. And half my table came back. Two came back right immediately after the game, went back to the Fraga table and picked up Swords and Witcher Complete rule books and some other stuff. And two others came by the next day and picked up stuff. That drives sales. And now you're probably going, well, yeah, but how much does the convention sales really do? I mean, I got news for you. It isn't so much the amount of sales that you make at when it comes to dollar value at a convention. It's the amount of people that you interact with and that you make a connection with that makes a difference, because they're the customers that can come back to your website, your online store, or find your stuff on Amazon and buy it. If that connection, it's hard.
A lot of people go to cons and they don't even buy anything at the con. They just look at things and they make notes and they go on Amazon later and buy it at, you know, a steep discount, which, you know, it's kind of sad, but that's what happens. But this is why the sale of right now is not practical, just because things are really messed up right now. Nobody knows that the new normal is not anything anybody recognizes. Nobody knows what to do. Nobody knows, is this a buyer's market? Is this a seller's market? Is this the right time to, you know, drop something like this? Is it the right time to pick up something like this? Nobody's going to know until there's a vaccine, there's people getting cured and things get relatively back to normal. So the consensus, the people I talk to, is that this is not the best time to be doing this. And so probably not. This is probably not really a story. It's just speculation. It's speculation, which is fun to speculate. Eric and I do it all the time. It's you know, it's fun. You sit there and you say, what if this? Now, of course, if it gets sold next week, we're going to look idiotic.
Oh, yeah, we will. But there's another reason why.
But yeah, there doesn't seem to be any – I just didn't get the feeling talking to the people I talked to.
Here's the thing. The IP when it comes to movies is tied up in a movie that's supposed to be coming out in the spring of 2022. So here's the deal. If you sell off Wizards of the Coast, or if you just sell off the D&D brand, it's still tied up in a movie. And remember, something like D&D, the money is not just a movie. The money is the sales of action figures, miniatures, board games, whatever else is going to come out of that movie. And Hasbro is banking on that money. So I personally think, my humble opinion, again, no inside information, is that these breaking of contracts or these non-breaking of contracts in a fuck you manner with Weiss and Hickman over Dragonlance and Gale Force 9 and whatever comes before the end of the year, because this shit comes in threes, I think it is Hasbro exerting more day-to-day management over Wizards of the Coast. Wizards of the Coast runs as its own company within the large company, and I think Hasbro is tamping down on that. That's just my opinion. And I get that feeling because I worked retail for 8.5 years before I did law enforcement. And a company that I worked for, Stearns, was one of many companies that were part of Allied and then were part of Federated, which became New Federated. Changing of owners changes how things were run. But under Allied, each company's division, whether it was Stearns, ANS, Orbax, whatever, Maze, they all were supposed to compete with each other as if they were different entities. But ANS, which was a New York chain at the time, was actually a different entity. It was a company that was not just created, it was bought and owned as a separate one. So
sure.
Corporate, you could chop it off. So when they merged with Macy's Federated and they picked up Macy's as a chain, the first thing they did was they killed ANS because it was the simplest thing to kill corporate-wise because it was its own entity. And then slowly they rebranded every other chain within the company to be Macy's because Macy's had that nationwide oomph behind it, which the other chains did not. I could see, there's a bit of an opposite going on right now with Hasbro because they've taken the board games away from Wizards of the Coast.
Yeah.
Even the D&D themed board games or the D&D branded board games aren't being published by Wizards of the Coast. They're being published by Hasbro. Avalon Hill.
They're too successful. They were too successful in making too much money to let Watsy have them.
Right, because Hasbro has experience with board games. Hasbro does not understand RPGs. It's a whole different world of oomph. So.
Yeah, they may. This is just spitballing here, but they may still be of the mindset that this new thing. Board games have been around for 60, 70, 80 years. RPGs have only been around 40 years. This may still be a flash in the pan that doesn't really, how many copies have they sold of Monopoly and Sorry and Yahtzee and Stratego over the years? And yeah, okay, great. D&D is great for right now, but people still going to be doing this and 20, 30 years, they're going to still be buying another copy of Monopoly. I think it's really hard to convince them that this has any staying power until it's, they have to be impressed. It's done better than it's ever done in history. D&D is selling more right now than it's ever sold in history. So that they have to be impressed by the fact that, when they first bought it, it was just a little trickle of money. Now you got now it's covering all kind, like you said, it's covering all kinds of the spectrum of merchandise and movies and I wanted to say sitcoms. We haven't a sitcom yet, but Critical Role is kind of a sitcom, really.
Yeah, it is.
And that's huge online. And huge enough for them to finance their own comic book, which is their own it's all there. It's just the pieces. The pieces are there. Something's going on. There's something going on for this contract. It could be just as simple as, like you said, Big Daddy, Hasbro looked down and said, whoa, what are these contracts you're writing?
Yeah.
We don't want the, what you're paying the Hickman and Weiss. How much? Gale Force 9's making what? No. That's not, no, we're not, we don't do business like that. No. We're out of that. We're going to do some lawyer stuff. We're going to say, hey, guess what? We're not going to say you can't publish this, but we're not going to okay anything. It's going to be lawyer speak for basically getting out of the contract. And you're right. There's probably other stuff on the horizon. This is not going to be the end of this. But that probably is all it is. It might be all it is. Because look, you have a crisis like COVID crisis and you take that time to reassess everything. You go through there and say, okay, what are we doing right? What are we doing wrong? Very few companies, unless you're Bezos and Amazon, very few companies or Home Depot. Good Lord, the Home Depot down the street from my house has been packed every day.
Walmart
for the past few months because everybody's doing fixing their house up because they got nothing else. They're all stuck at home. Right. There's a few companies that made a lot of money during the COVID crisis, but I think 80% of them didn't. And so you look at it and say, okay, what can we do differently, or where are we losing money? And this is just a time to reflect and take the bean counters in there and the consultants and look in there and say, oh, you signed this, we did this 3 years ago, whoa, no, we don't care anymore, we don't care about Brad Dragonlance anymore. That was a great idea. And you also see this problem. I'm no working retail, when Eric had to work retail, you're probably rolling your eyes going, okay, yeah, you guys work retail, we're talking about multi-billion-dollar companies, but everything's trickled down. And the whole thing is work retail is you always knew when there's a change in management, because all of a sudden you got all these new rules to follow. And then because the people that come in have to justify their worth or the fact that they're, you know, they're making money doing something. So they issue these edicts that are, a lot of them are stupid. They're just absolutely idiotically stupid because they don't really know what they're doing. They just know they have to do something. Because right. I remember working at worked for a company called Record Bar in the 80s, 90s, which used to be a really big regional music store. Of course, they got all sucked together to – and I think Blockbuster bought everybody in the end. But they bought Record Bar, bought Musicland, all those companies. But you know, we had a change of management one day because we get these rules that come down that we all have to wear ties and have our hair cut. And, I mean, some of the guys, they look like Robert Plant. I mean, they had, like, long hair. This nice. And that. They're like – I ain't cutting my hair. They quit. They just said, surprised. You got to cut your hair. You got to wear a tie. We're like, you know, this is a music store, right? Like, we sell like rock music and right. we have to talk to kids a lot. And, you know, we don't look like the, an FBI agent. And so finally, after we lost all our best salesmen who all quit and went to Musicland because they didn't require to cut your hair, then after about a month, they said, oh, yeah, we'll forget about that. We're not going to, you don't have to cut your hair or wear a tie. I'm like, oh, great. Well,
I already cut my hair. So.
These guys either already cut their hair or they quit. They left because I look like Robert Plant. I'm not going to cut my hair. You know, my hair's, I got this long blonde hair down to my waist or whatever.
It took me a long time to grow it.
But all these companies do this. They somebody new comes in, they have to justify, you know, their existence. And so they, you know, so it could be any number of these things. It could be none of these things, or it could be all of these things, or it could be some of these things. But that's what happens. Is it every once in a while these kind of number crunching things happen, and people get caught in the middle. And unfortunately, you know, people like Weiss and Hickman and Gale Force, and there's going to be somebody else. You just know it. There'll be another one.
Come on, the end of the year is coming. We got to get our trifecta in.
And also look at, and that's a good point too. Look at the end of the year. That's, of course, you know, you got your quarter coming up. You got your fourth quarter coming up. You got, you know, that's, you know, a lot of times that's your most important quarter, is the last quarter of the year. You got to see what's been going on the first three quarters and say, okay, how can I cook the books to make things either look worse than they are or look better than they are? And so, yeah, somebody's probably saying we need to get all this stuff done before the end of the year. We need to get this, you know, to get these things taken care of before Christmas rolls around. And
and we're talking about that. And like you said, we're in the midst of the world of COVID, and it is certainly affecting, I don't know, not necessarily mom and pop stores, but they are affected, but the smaller retail stores, whether it's gaming or anything, are the ones that are suffering. Yes, your chains will get through the pandemic, but
that money went to Amazon. All that mom and pop money went to Amazon. There has been an absolute just self destruction of game stores, of mom and pop stores, because they just can't compete. I mean, they don't have the resources necessary. The reason you go to your local game store is you want to, you know, you get out of the house, you want to get away from the wife and kids, you just want to hang out for a while. Well, there's no hanging out. You can't hang out anymore. And so you look on Amazon like, well, I can buy the same books I buy my game store, you know, for a quarter of the price. I mean, yeah, I love to talk to the guy who owns the store and the people in there, but they're not there. So I still want to buy my game books, and I want to buy my comics, and I want to buy my dice. I'll just buy them off Amazon, you know, and just absolutely kill the mom and pop game store. I mean, we've heard over the, you know, past 8 months, we keep hearing just awful stories of game stores. I mean, some were able to adapt. Some actually are able to survive, but depending on how much longer this goes, they might not be able to survive either. I mean, an event we'll remember forever. Like, yeah, this is when all the game stores disappeared. It was 2020.
Yeah, we already lost comic book stores. Any comic book stores that are still in existence are not selling comic books as their primary source of income. No. It's Magic the Gathering and other collectible card games as the main source. Just like your game stores. They're making their money off of collectible card games. And that's what supports the other peripheral stuff. So, I mean, just like if you're a game company, an RPG company these days, and you write stuff for Pathfinder or for the OSR, you probably have to write for 5e too, because the money is in 5e. Look who's dropped in. The better half of the
Glazer. Oh, no.
She's checking up on you, Mike.
I was hoping she wouldn't find us. She finally found us after all these weeks. Damn it.
Yeah, Jen's checking up
on you. Yeah, there's the end of that fun time.
You must follow the corporate line now.
Yeah. Oh boy, I gotta Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got to pimp some Frog God products, I guess, later on. Cool. Just like I was going to do anyway, Jen. I promise. I was going to do that at some point. Yeah. I'm going to talk about that stuff. Did we need to pimp something too? I can't remember.
No.
I want to throw a couple of things in there while we're speculating on WotC. Just a couple of random things. I talked to Alex Kamer today. Hugs to you. Yeah, sure. Hugs to you. Watch the knife in her hand as she hugs you. Dr. Alex Kamer told Gamehole Con Virtual was a big success. They had over 1,500 people participate. So kudos to them. I'm glad they got that got that going. That's probably, I guess, the last big virtual con of the year. And then next year, of course, we have Virtual Con, Total Con, and Virtual Con, Gary Con coming up in February, yes. March, and after that, I guess we'll see what happens. We're hopeful we could get a vaccine in and have something done with that.
Well, and here's the whole thing, and I'll touch on that after we look at David Thompson's comment here. Two of the RPG shops in my city both stock RPGs almost as an afterthought. Very small selections. One is mostly comics, board games. The other is mostly books and tacky merch. I'm afraid to even ask what tacky merch is. Third shop is a gamer's cafe, and a lot of stuff they sell smells of coffee. So I don't shop there. You know what? I'm not a coffee drinker either. I know I was a cop for 20 years, and I'm not a big donut person. I actually prefer crullers. Go figure that one out. But I would drink tea or hot chocolate on patrol. But here's and of course now this derailed me for a second. But we're talking about virtual cons, and here's the thing: virtual cons lack that interaction. Yes, you can game, and I will say, virtual tabletop gaming is damn close to gaming at a table with your friends. I had no issues with that. It's been very satisfying. However, it does not replicate gaming at a convention. Because one thing, gaming at a convention, you game with strangers and you actually can make that connection, which you can't really make that connection with the VTT. I find with VTTs that the games I run with people that I have connections with, who I already know from online or whatever, run extremely well. They run like a well-oiled machine. And when you try to do like a convention-style game in a VTT, it's a lot harder than running a convention-style game in front of people. So that's part of it. But the other thing, too, is, again, conventions are a social activity. Now, Mike and I have already discussed some thoughts we have that we want to do to support conventions that are going digital. It will probably entail some additional nights of this very Talking Crit podcast.
We're talking next year when we go roll into Total Con and Gary Con.
Yeah, our idea that we are playing with is we'd like to get special guests, and they don't have to be A names, okay? But we certainly know a lot of B names and A names.
Yeah,
but
I mean we're like C names, so yeah. We're happy to get B names.
See, I'm working to be a C+. That's what I got out of high school with. You know, so I'm looking to at least be as good as it was in high school. But the thing is, we want to at least be able to replicate as best we can that feeling of socializing or getting to hear stories from people in the industry. That's the reason why I go to conventions. I go to conventions to see people in the industry and socialize and go to the bar, the hotel.
Yeah, David said here he's never been to a gaming con. They don't appear in my area. They don't really interest me. But the thing that – look, I didn't go to a lot of – I used to go to comic cons a lot because I really love meeting the guys like George Perez or John Byrne. We're talking like the 80s here, yep. Frank Miller. I love meeting those artist guys and just asking questions and, you know, how did you think of this idea? Or would you, you know, figure this out? Gaming cons didn't ever interest me that much, but once I started going, I was hooked because there's nothing like sitting there, you know, after the dealer rooms close and you all go to the bar and you're just having a beer with a guy like Alan Hammack, you know, and they just start telling you stories. And that's how the lore of our hobby gets passed on to these guys. You know, they tell you stuff and you're just like, what? You used to date Darlene? that's crazy, you know. Just and so they start telling you stories, you know. So I was the last time I was at GaryCon, I was talking to Darlene and Alan Hammack, and I apologize, I can't remember the third gentleman's name, used to work for TSR. And Darlene says, "Well, remember when you and I dated, Alan?" I'm like, "Whoa, Alan Hammack and Darlene dated? Okay, I got to hear this story." And it was a great story too, because apparently Alan Hammack was Frank Mincer's roommate, and so it was just crazy. So, but you know, this is just great. You get to hear these stories, and you get to hear, you know, how'd you think of this idea, and you know, what really went on it. You know, a few years ago, we had a TSR X who will not reveal his name under penalty of torture, who we got in the car and we were driving, and we said it was actually we took a long trip. Or not a long trip, it was a 2-hour trip with this person, and it was several of us. And so about an hour of the trip, when he couldn't escape, I asked him, I said, "So, tell me about Lorraine Williams." Because he was working there at the time before, when Gary was there, and then after Lorraine. So it's like, look, it's just us in the car, just us kids, you know, let's hear some stories. And to his credit, he told us some really interesting tales about working under Lorraine. So that's why you get these guys, you know, you get the guys, you get a couple beers in them, you don't know what they're going to throw out there. I mean, it's fun, you know, that keeps the lore of the hobby going.
I mean, I remember sitting down with Dennis Astaire one evening, and Dennis and I were talking, and we were talking Swordsman's Relight, and we were talking Bunnies and Burrows. This is before the Bunnies and Burrows Kickstarted. He was working on it. And, finally, I looked at my watch, and I was like, Dennis, like, yeah, yo, listen, I got to man the table at, like, 9 o'clock, and it's knocking on 4 a.m. and we're talking 4 a.m. Texas time. So this is, like, 6 a.m. New York time. Oh, dear. And I really need to get some rest. And we were both – I mean
– yeah.
It's just something very special about that. It's something, you know, you don't find necessarily online, but we'd like to do our best to duplicate that experience for our watchers and listeners.
Yeah, I mean, it's because that's one thing we're missing in the last year is we're missing these stories. We're missing to be able to hang out with these dudes. And, you know, and speaking of Dennis, so the first year we had North Texas, he and Janelle Jaquez used to work together. And this was when Janelle was Paul. And so they had not seen each other in many years, and they used to work together at Coleco. And I can't remember who was whose boss. I think Dennis was Janelle's boss. And they were sitting in the lobby, the little kitchen area, and they started talking about the years at Coleco. And so me and two other people were just sitting there, and we didn't say a word for the next 2 hours. We just listened to them both talk. And they gave us all these stories and memories of working at Coleco back in the 80s. And it was just the most amazing thing. I mean, I wish I could have recorded it. I should have pushed record on my – well, I didn't have a cell phone back then probably, so I don't know.
Right.
But pushed record because it's just the most amazing talk because they were just telling us, you know, oh, do you remember this? Or remember we worked on, you know, college football game and this happened? Or do you remember this? And then it was these great stories about, you know, working in the video game industry because a lot of those TSR guys, people don't know, when they left TSR, they all went to work in video game industry. You know, not all of them, but you know, a lot of them. Lawrence Schick worked for, did a lot of work with Morrowind and some of, well, actually, he did some Skyrim stuff too, but he, you know, he did a lot of stuff with the Elder Scrolls. Dennis Astaire, Jaquez, Sandy Peterson, basically wrote many of the levels of Quake, was a huge, I mean, that's why Quake is so Call of Cthulhu-ish, if you ever played Quake back in the 90s. So yeah, it's really cool because they all went to work at video game in the video game industry. So, I mean, there's just all these really interesting little bits of history you miss by not actually attending a con in person. Cause as Eric says, I mean, you can still play games, these guys, and play online, but you don't have that after all the games are over and after the dealer rooms close, you all go to the bar and have a beer, or you go to the hamburger joint down the street and everybody has a burger. I mean, you just don't have that. And so, hopefully next year, Eric and I may kind of bring that back a little bit. We're hoping to have some of the people, maybe, I don't know, maybe a Luke Gygax or, you know, who knows? I mean, some of the people that work at Total Con, maybe we can get Angela from Total Con to come on and talk to us. I mean, and just, you know, tell us a few stories that we're just not going to get to hear because of COVID. You know, and then that's and that's the one thing that I really, I mean, besides seeing people like Eric or other people, you know, that we don't get to see very often, you know, right. And it's like a family. Every two or three cons, you see the same people over and over again. So you're always like, hey, what's up? And you get that 10 minutes with them, 15 minutes with them. Well, now we have been 2 years without, or a year and a half without seeing these people face to face. And yeah, you keep in touch somewhat online, but it's not the same.
No.
And it's definitely not the same meeting these really, these legends of our hobby, not being able to talk to them. I mean, I miss my buddy Alan. Alan Hammock is a hoot, man. I miss that dude. He's great, and he's got some great stories. I mean, all these guys do.
Well, you know, David makes a good point that he would be going to con for the beer, grub, and chat. And I'll be honest with you, that's what I go for. I haven't played in a game at a convention in years. I run games at conventions, don't get me wrong, and I have a blast doing so. But I go to work the table for Frog God Games and meet and greet people from the hobby. And I'll tell you the truth, I enjoy meeting people that I don't know that want to come over and talk Frog God Games or seeing Frog God products for the first time. Or a lot of times, like at TotalCon, when I'm covering for Jeff, when Jeff goes to grab some food or use the restroom, and I'm covering his table, I get to talk up Jeff's stuff and talk to people. Oh. Have you run this one? Well, it's like, and I own this one. I've read it. I haven't had a chance.
There's a guy I miss, Jeff Delaney, man. I mean, for all we know, he's in prison now. He probably is in prison. I don't know. But no, he's a great guy. Well, I'm just a fun. I mean, we need to get Jeff on here. Jeff's a great guy to talk to. Oh my
God. Yeah, Jeff would be a lot of fun.
He has an interesting background too. He was a metalhead, death metal guy in high school. So he's got some great stories about that. He was way off the rails. He's got some great stories before he got into the gaming industry. But yeah, Jeff's awesome. I mean, yeah, and you miss all that. You miss being, at GaryCon every year, we run across from Black Blade. We got to see all the Black Blade guys.
Oh, yeah.
Alan and John. I mean, they were there, you know, all day long. And Jeff, like I said, Jeff's next to us. And then the Barshes are behind us. And, you know, and then you get guys walk up that, you know, I've been friends with Flint Dilly a long time. Lorraine Williams' brother, and used to work for TSR back in the day, and was friends with Gary. Hung out with Gary a lot in when Gary was in Hollywood, and he walked by the booth one day. I was like, "Flint, it's me, Mike." And we've been talking online for years, and I've been trying to get him to come guest at North Texas. We just our schedules don't work out. I mean, he's big time. Let's face it, you know.
Yeah,
Yeah, I got a picture with him finally after all these years. It was so great talking to him. You know, he's like, yeah, I'm here to see everybody, you know, because he's remembered finally by a lot of the TSR people and by the Gygax brothers. And, you know, he's got some great stories. By the way, he came out with a book called Flint did. And it has, because Flint in the 80s worked on the G.I. Joe cartoon, the Transformers cartoon, did a lot of work, wrote quite a few scripts for those shows. But he also worked, he did the Sagard series, and he did the Buck Rogers stuff. His family actually owns the Buck Rogers franchise, and he has a lot of stories about Gary, because when Gary was in Hollywood, he hung out with Flint all the time, and a lot of the stories I'd never heard. He would tell stories, and I was like, I'd never heard this from anyone. So I'm going to find the name of his book.
The Game Master.
That's it, Game Master, yeah.
My Life in the 80s Geek Culture Trenches with G.I. Joe, Dungeons & Dragons, and the Transformers. It's available in hardcover or audio book.
I think they're all autographed. I think you autographed all the copies.
Amazon might not have all autographed copies.
Probably not.
But and it's available in Kindle format. Kindle might be my best choice. I can read in bed.
We can get Flint on this show one night. Flint's a hoot too. He's a great guy. But that's just the kind of thing that you don't get when you're not at a con. You don't get to run into these guys I remember going to a fantasy sci-fi con in the early 90s, and I had a bunch of – Clive Barker was a guest there, and I ran – and so he did a little talk or something, and I got there with my books, and he had to leave and go to someplace else, and I said, you know, Barker – or Mr. Barker, I really love your stuff, and is there any way I get you to sign my books? They're like – and his handler's like, no, we got to go. He goes, whoa, hold on, just walk with us. So – for 5 minutes, we're walking. He's signing all the books of blood, the Clive Barker stuff. Talking the whole time. It was the most awesome thing ever. I mean, it's just like, you know, it was like me and him. I was sitting there with Clive Barker, just just chatting it up on the walk over to wherever he had to go next to, you know, so that's just,
we can get this to work. And like I said, we're going to, as the year comes to a close, I believe TotalCon's in February, GaryCon is in March. If we can get this stuff synchronized, you'll be able to come in to the live stream and ask questions and make comments. And I know you don't want to, you'd be like, I don't give a fuck what Eric and Mike are saying. I want to hear what.
I don't give a fuck what we say either most of the time.
Yeah, but yeah, you know, you're right. I want to hear from your cat. We hope to be able to give you that chance. So that's something that's in the works.
Yes, we've talked about that. We will get that working in one way or another. So, and if North Texas has to go for, North Texas, I already talked with Doug. We're lucky that we're in June. We're hoping by June there'll be stuff figured out. But if not, we have to do what we did last year. We'll probably still do digital plus small in person like we did last year, maybe, you know, 60, 80 people. Right. But we'll might have to do something for North Texas too. And North Texas, I know I can get those guys on. They're losers. Doug.
Oh, there you go. It's going to give them each You know what? They could be at the con and socially distance.
Yep. Oh, definitely.
You know, you got your computer. You go in the corner there, put on the headset, and talk.
Oh, we can definitely get guys. If we have to do North Texas, we can get guys to talk to there. But yeah, we're looking at TotalCon and GaryCon to begin with next year. And so we'll try to offer you something like that. We'll try to bring you some people. I mean, if nothing else, it'll be – and we'll try to ask the right kind of questions too. We know you want the dirt. You know, you don't want the boring stuff.
Yeah,
okay, sure. Which last project you worked on, Mr. Rasmussen, and what was it like working for TS? No. We're gonna get down dirty with these guys. We're gonna ask them the questions nobody asked.
Yeah, like Merle, like, did you like dumpster dive at TSR and steal anything?
Who did you kill? You know how to kill two. There's too much in here that. You must have killed somebody. I know you did. I'll tell you one thing funny about Merle that I always forget. Like Merle, he was really young when he worked at TSR.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't think that now you look at it, but he was like really young. He was like 20, 21. I mean, when he wrote Top Secret, he was actually pretty young. Now he looks like your favorite little grandfather now, he and his wife, when they go to cons and, you know, looks like he couldn't hurt a flea, but I don't know, man. There's something dark about that guy. I don't know. There's something going on in Merle's head. There's something crazy. There's craziness in those eyes. Let me tell you.
Well, that's why like when he runs a game, his wife has to be in the same room because she has to make sure he doesn't go crazy.
No, there's some. They do hang around together all the time.
You know, he might actually act out the part of the GM and tell you, "I'm sorry, you're dead. Let me take care of your death for you." By the way. It'll be relatively painless.
We'll get some of those guys. We'll get them on, but. We'll get the guys that go to TotalCon, definitely, and GaryCon, and we got some other surprises here and there when it comes to con people. We're just hoping that things get somewhat back to normal next year because, you know, it's we're kind of entering into uncharted territory here in terms of cons being canceled not one but 2 years in a row.
Yeah,
that's very much uncharted territory. I mean, we're talking all the way back to World War II when you had stuff canceled. I mean. World War II was crazy. I mean, you had baseball teams that had like just Joe Schmo off the street. I mean, we're talking professional baseball teams that did, you know, had players that, you know,
you got two legs and at least
yeah,
one
pretty
hand.
Much. All I mean, right, if you look at some of those rosters from 40 to 45, they were pretty scary. You know, you had a bunch of old guys that were too old for the draft. Then you had a bunch of guys that just grabbed off the street. So
then we have a football game on Sunday, where all four potential quarterbacks for one team.
Oh, that was the Denver. That was the Denver Saints debacle.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Their quarterback was their practice squad wide receiver.
He played not even the wide receiver.
I think in high school. I don't know. He threw one pass. He had one pass for 17 yards the entire game. That was
okay. It was a lot of the
quarterbacks were out with COVID.
Football team was a running game. And a lot of times we have the fullback line up as quarterback.
To they just threw – I think they hiked – I saw a part of it. They just hiked the ball back to the running back half the time because that guy was throwing some terrible passes out there. He only got picked off twice. I think Tony Romo had worse days than that, but he only got picked off twice. It's uncharted territory when it comes to conventions here because we just don't go 2 years without a con. I mean, it just doesn't happen. I mean, most cons, when they miss a year, the first thing you think is that con's in financial difficulty and probably not going to go on anymore. They're probably being canceled.
Right.
And, you know, because cons have had to miss for various reasons every once in a while, and usually they're smaller cons. And because when they miss, every time you miss a con, you're basically losing a segment of your audience. You're becoming more forgotten. People forget about your con. That's why you want your con to go every year, and you want it to go at the same time every year. You want people to know that when March runs around, it's Gary Con. When June comes around, it's North Texas. When you know October, November comes around, it's a Game Hole Con, that kind of thing. And if you miss a year, that's like a death knell for your convention because nobody remembers you the next year. Like, oh, did you have a con once? Well, yeah, we only missed a year. Well, I don't remember. It's been, you know, it's been 2 years now. This is going to be really weird coming in next year. And especially if we have to miss a whole nother year, that's going to be very weird. Very, very strange.
I mean, like, for Gary Con, it's going to be 2 years wiped off the books, really. And that's huge.
They did a good job last year with their online con with only 2 weeks to prepare. This year they've got a lot longer time, so I think they're going to be able to handle it okay. But people still miss being in person. But I think Gary Con will be okay because they do have the Gygax name to help them out quite a bit. I worry about some of the smaller cons that don't really have the, you know, don't have any deep pocket. I mean, not that Gary Con has deep pockets, but just that they have a lot of name recognition.
Right,
and people want them to succeed.
You know, they will be back. But yeah, you're right. Smaller conventions are the ones you got to worry about.
Yeah, I mean, Gen Con, they'll miss a year. I mean, it's going to suck. But unless they have unless they didn't save enough money, they got major financial difficulties. They'll be back. Now, what they're going to do, what they and big conventions like Origins and Spiel and stuff are going to do, I have no clue. Because it's Europe is looking as bad as we are right now. I mean, Spiel and Essen. I mean, it makes Gen Con look like a garden party with a bunch of old ladies. I mean, that they have over 100,000 people every year at Spiel. But you know, can you get that many people together? I mean, Germany has even stricter laws than the United States has right now. I mean, a lot of Europe is having huge relapses. So. I don't know. It's gonna be really interesting missing a whole nother year of cons if that's what happens. And then you have I've been talking to some doctor friends of mine. You know, even if you have a vaccine out, that doesn't mean everybody just go hog wild and, you know, immediately start packing stadiums, you know, to go to a Rolling Stones concert or whatever. Or Rolling Stones, that dates me. Taylor Swift concert. I mean, you can't just all just cram back in together. I mean, you know, you still got to be careful, you know, because not everybody's going to be vaccinated at the same time. You know, they're talking about vaccinating first responders and doctors and emergency room people, you know, to begin with. And so it may be a while before people like, you know, you and I get in line to be able to get a vaccine.
Yeah, I mean, and I am, you know, currently considered to be high risk, and I still don't know where that's going to fall in line with all this. And here's the other thing, too. Are you going to have conventions of the large type going, well, yes, we're going to have Gen Con. Well, we're going to cut our attendance down to 50,000 this year, but you must show a proof of vaccination or show the proof that you were actually priorly exposed to COVID. And is that going to be something going forward?
That's good. Yeah. My wife and I talked about that, you know, and my wife especially is very, very against show me your papers type stuff, you know, and I'm maybe not as bad, but I still don't like the, we must see our papers, you know, I don't like that kind of shit when it comes to any part of my life, you know? And so, yeah, that's going to be a whole nother thing. What if your county says you have to do that? I mean, we have North Texas and Dallas County. What if Dallas County says you can have a convention, but you have to ask everybody there for their papers? Ugh. Then that befalls to us. Then we're the ones that have to sit there and be the bad guy and say, we're sorry, but we're going to have to ask for your vaccination papers for you to get in the con. you know, and then they punch me in the or Doug in the mouth. I mean, it's not our problem. We're just doing what the county says we have to do.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing with, like, this, you know, handgun laws. I mean, you know, there's a lot of counties that say, you know, you have to, you know, have your 306 documentation on the wall when you walk in Texas like that. So when you walk in, there has to be a thing on the wall that says handguns are not allowed in here. And if you don't have that on there, you can walk with a handgun. I mean, right. If you do not have that on the wall, you walk with a handgun. Now, what happens a lot of times is that, you know, a county may require a business to have that. Maybe the business doesn't want it, but they don't have any choice. And somebody's going to walk in and start yelling at the person. And they're like, look, an example is Whataburger. Well, Whataburger does not allow handguns on the premises. But if you talk to a lot of people that own Whataburger, they may not disagree with Second Amendment rights, but right. Their hands are tied. Corporate says you cannot have people in your store, you know, that have concealed hand, you know, weaponry. And so the same thing happened. Many have conventions. You may say, look, I don't really care, but we're being asked by the state or county that
right.
or city that we have to see your papers
now
before you can come in.
I'm not going to give anybody legal advice, but if you are carrying concealed legally, nobody should have any idea if you're properly carrying that you have a concealed weapon on you, because that defeats the whole purpose of having a concealed weapon. So I'm not giving legal advice by saying that. I'm just saying that if your weapon is so poorly concealed that the moment you walk into a venue or a retail establishment or a bar, the first thing people go is, are you a cop? You're not carrying properly.
Oh, Sean, yeah, you're right. So 306 is concealed carry, 307 is open carry, yeah. But yeah, if that's on the door, I mean, my partner Doug, he's a huge gun guy, carries usually 2-3 guns every time he goes anywhere. He will obey that signage. If we've walked up to the mall before and seen the signage on the wall, had to walk all the way back to the car and put his guns up because he, you know, it's even though as you say, it defeats the purpose, it's still against the law. I mean, if he's found with a concealed handgun in there, he's breaking the law, he could be ticketed or arrested. So yeah, it's the same may be true. Like, what if they say that about vaccination? You know, they may say, look, if you have to present that, and if we find somebody in there that's not been vaccinated, we're going to cite you. And so then you're like, well, you know, okay, well then now we're having to enforce vaccination laws. It might be crazy.
It's rough. I mean, a Ticketmaster was trying to put out a blanket vaccination requirement, and then I heard that. Then they backed off.
Yeah.
But they're allowing venues to.
They basically drop kicked. They said, we don't want to have to do that. We're gonna let venues, that's the chicken shit way out. But I mean, honestly, that's the best way to do it.
Right.
I mean,
well, really. Here's the thing too. If Madison Square Garden says we want people vaccination, then I don't have a constitutional right to go see a Rangers game. I know.
No. Nope.
So if you're saying that, or to go see, Postmodern Jukebox, which I had tickets for back in October, and now they're punted to sometime next year. I don't have a constitutional right to go there. So requiring me to be vaccinated is, you know, again, not a big deal. Now, if you require me to be vaccinated before, I don't know, going into the post office or something like that, that's something different. Mm-hmm. But, to an entertainment venue, again, it's a totally optional part of my existence. I don't see an issue with that.
Well, let's see. Well, Wildy, what are the proof of vaccination? Okay, but here's my only issue with it is that why am I having to enforce state local laws? It shouldn't be on me, but it's going to be. It's going to be on me personally, because I run a con with Doug. It will be on us to have to tell some poor schmo, no, you can't come in because you left your vaccination slip at home.
Right.
And that's not even getting past the people. You know, there's people that my wife's one of them that have issues with Guillain-Barré syndrome. For those who don't know, that can be activated by a vaccine. My wife hasn't had a flu vaccine shot in probably a decade. Longer, because she's high risk for developing Guillain-Barré syndrome. Her mom had it, and then her mom caught it from a vaccine. So what are we supposed to say when somebody says, "Well, I can't get vaccinated because I have now"? I talked to a doctor today, actually, online, and they're so far right now, they think that the COVID vaccine is not going to activate Guillain-Barré syndrome because it's very technical, but it deals with a different kind of antibody. Okay. But let's say that it does. Right. So my wife's not going to get a COVID vaccine. I mean, and a lot of people won't get a COVID vaccine. So we just tell them tough luck. I mean, you can't. Sorry, I mean, well, you can't get a vaccine, but
it's going to be part of the agreement.
I don't like
when
to be the police officer here. I don't want to be policeman Mike and tell people you can or can't come to my con because you don't have a vaccination slip.
Here's the thing, and you're talking to somebody who did not believe in using EasyPass for years because I didn't like the idea of the government knowing my travel. You know, not that I was paranoid, but
right.
I worked in internal affairs. I have seen what easy passes can get people.
Oh, and you know what information you can get. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It's amazing. Now, Rich and I, we went down to our local pub, I guess, was it last Wednesday or last Sunday? We went at noon, right when they opened. There was one other person in there beside the server. We sat in the back. We call it the confessional because you got walls on three sides. But when you walked in, you had to have your temperature taken, which is like having a gun put to your head, literally. Mm-hmm. You had to sign a book with your name and telephone number and the number of people in your party because this is all for tracing in case there's an outbreak that's linked to the location.
Sure.
Instinctively, I am like, I don't want to put my fucking name in this book, but I do, but I don't like it.
You see, you understand the necessity of it, but it still gives you a little something twinges in your head saying,
yeah,
I don't know about this. Yeah.
Yeah. It brings me up to that point. So again, going down to the pub is an optional activity, whereas maybe food shopping isn't. So food shopping shouldn't have that requirement, and it doesn't. But if it's an option, I can see why. I just don't have. I don't have to like something to understand why it's being done. I don't like it. I do understand it. I mean, listen, you can't go to a doctor's office these days without a cell phone. You got to. In the case of my endocrinologist, you got a call from the parking lot. Hey, it's Eric. Yeah, I'm here for my 215. Uh-huh. Ask a shitload of questions about COVID. No, I have not left the state or the country in the last 2 weeks.
Yep.
No, I have feeling in all my extremities. No, I have not lost my taste of smell or taste. Yada, yada, yada. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Okay. Then you get upstairs. And it's
the same question.
And the door is same fucking thing. Locked. And yeah. I'm like, and there's a note in the door. Now, just the first time the door has been locked, I've been going now monthly for a couple of months. I'm like, I guess somebody was an asshole, and decided to ignore whatever protocols they had and just bar. I was like,
rolled right in.
So now I gotta go on my. If you don't have a cell phone, how do you? And you can't find a payphone within the county of Queens at this point. So what are you? Wait a minute. Excuse me. I need to borrow your phone. I know it's COVID, but I need to breathe and spit on your phone so I can call my doctor.
Yeah, I loved it. So I went with my doctor, had to answer all those questions online. Then they texted me, I have to answer all the questions again. Then when I got there, they asked me all the questions. Yeah. So this is the third time. But, you know, I mean, I guess you, what are you going to say? I mean, you're like, okay, yeah, I mean, I understand why you have to do it because – maybe in the meantime you developed symptoms, you know. Right. So they want to know, okay, I know we asked you on Monday if you had symptoms, and we asked you to get on Tuesday, but we're going to ask you to get on Wednesday because you're here. And I understand it, but yeah, it's annoying. I mean, you know, but that's part of what's going on in 2020, right? Everything's annoying. Everything's a little trouble. And wearing a mask is annoying, but we wear masks because it's a small imposition. Of all the things we can do, it's probably the least invasive or difficult. I mean, we all grumble about it. You know, like, I don't got to put my mask on. I mean, we have an elevator here at the condo I'm staying at, and, you know, you're supposed to wear masks in the elevator, which if I'm the only person in the elevator, I'm not going to wear a mask, but I have my mask there.
Right.
So somebody steps on, I put my mask on, you know. So, I mean, you put your mask on for 15 seconds. I mean, however long it takes to go to the fifth floor to the first floor, you know, but you just do it and you grumble about it. You're like, oh, stupid. I had to put my mask on for 20 25 seconds or whatever, but you just do it because that's, you know, where we're at right now, right? I mean, the right. small, you know, if that's the least you have to do, that's, you know.
And again, you know, this world of COVID has killed in-person gaming. I mean, for the most part, we're not gaming in people's houses. And I think in New York State, if you're mixing households, you have to wear a mask. I know in Pennsylvania you do. I heard that. So if you're mixing households, everybody in the household must wear a mask. So who's going to be gaming for 4 hours with masks on? That's not happening.
Well, actually, the last time we were in a game in October before I went on vacation, we had a game at the warehouse and we did mask up. We masked up, but. And you see the warehouse. I don't know. Have you been to the warehouse? You've been to the warehouse, yeah. Right? It's pretty. I mean, it's pretty spaced out.
You got so room.
There was
space.
Three of us around a very gigantic table, and we were wearing masks.
Okay.
It wasn't. I mean, it was just awkward because you're like, "What did you say?" You know, I can't hear you. I have a mask on. That's why you can't hear me.
It's like, stop being a Charlie Brown teacher and speak. Yeah,
if you had 10 players,
it's not working.
No, everybody with masks on, you wouldn't be able to hear anything. Yeah, that's not good. Yeah, but so I guess we'll get past this. But in the meantime, Eric and I will hopefully entertain you enough to.
And we're not going to do a short shoe and a tap dance, but we will be here with funny stories and hopefully entertaining guests. We should have guests for the next two episodes of Talking Crit.
And we have a long list of people who still want to come on, too.
You know what? And talking about Merle from earlier, I did an interview with Merle. I got like 2 years ago here's the question. I think we can get Merle. The only question is, will he be able to actually log in? I had to interview him over the phone and record
technology
it.
Are like,
yeah. So, you know, that's the problem when you start hitting generation one of the movers and shakers in the RPG industry. Some of them have moved on with technology and some still believe computers are the size of those.
Some are really good at it. I mean, some are better than I am.
Oh, yeah. No, really I've seen that too.
Look, I always say if Bill Webb can do it, anybody can do it. Bill Webb runs an online game every week. And so I'm like, if he does it, it can't be hard because the man does not know how to barely how to know you use a cell phone. He runs an online game. So if he can do it, anybody can do it.
Is little John his second?
He probably does. You know what? Yeah, I didn't think about it. Johnny probably sets the whole thing up for him. And then
John,
says,
don't go far. I'll double your allowance.
But no, he runs a Zoom game every week. So, I mean, if he's doing it, I wasn't going to be on the last Frog God game day, but as Zach said to me, Bill runs a game. You have to. I'm like, you're right. If Bill does it, I got to do it because Bill can barely work a cell phone. So yeah, but it was, and that was fun. And we'll have another Frog Guy game day coming up next year. We'll talk about that. Speaking of Frog Guy, let me throw in a pimp real quick here.
We better pimp or Jen
Book of Tavern Volume 3 is already funded. We have Book of Taverns Volume 1 and 2. What it gives you one or two taverns. Or actually gives you, it's not one or two, it gives you two or three taverns, and they're fully detailed, and you can just drop them in your campaign. Say, okay, I need a tavern. And they all have a different hook to them, a different little quirky thing, and so they have little hooks built around them or stories and stuff.
Do you know their quality? Because I had nothing to do with them.
They're all really good. I don't know who wrote the let me see who wrote the two taverns in this one. Lion Rampant by Chris Jones and Four Winds by Chris. Oh, Chris Jones wrote both of them. So, but yeah, they're really good. This will be the third one, but it's up right now. Indiegogo, it's going to be there another couple weeks, so check it out. Book of Taverns, Volume 3. I think I did my Frog God Games duty now.
You did your guy. The point is,
so if Jennifer's still listening, I hope you give me a thumbs up. Jen's one of my devilettes also for the Midnight Auction. I know she likes to be known as a devilette. That's probably high on her list of bullet points to be known as.
It's a qualification.
Bad Mike's devilette for the Midnight Auction. But that was, I think that's the only thing Frog God has going right now as we roll to the end of the year. And we should have pretty soon we're going to have the Sword Wizardry box sets.
I'm looking forward to that.
I'm excited about that. We'll have to do a show on that when we get those. Although definitely. We don't do reviews and stuff, but we could still probably
I might have to turn off the virtual background for that one, because when I, when I hold up my bottle of, actually, this is showing pretty good.
Is that winter? Is that winter?
This is Winter Jack. Hold on, let me get the right side. Hold on.
You know what? I forgot. You know what? It's Winter Jack time again. I can't wait.
So, just a quick personal update. So, here's the deal. Since I am, nice, happy type 2 diabetic. And after my congestive heart failure, I wasn't drinking the beer. So my beer that I had from my beer tender or my beer mini keg deal, all those 60 half gallons, all went skunky. I just drained them today. And I realized I can't get light beer for it. So, the small craft beer I was getting for it, it's just not feasible for me to be able to drink in anything more than a half glass at a time. So I bit the bullet and I said, it's got to go. So instead, I got a Keurig that will be right next to me by my desk and my bottle of Winter Jack. So I can take a nice Irish tea or a chai tea and put it in my mug and be able to be slightly intoxicated during the presentation. I hope it doesn't get me banned on YouTube or
always
Facebook.
Like a slightly intoxicated.
For talking about intoxicants, because apparently talking about 28mm miniatures.
Oh, my gosh. For those who don't know, Tom Tullis got banned. He got a short ban from Facebook is not your friend, folks. Facebook has an algorithm that pulls out any mention of animals, guns, selling people. I mean, anything that sounds weird, they have an – it's not a human being. It's an algorithm. I've listed stuff on RPG Auctions before, and if it has a picture of an animal, a face, or a gun on the surface, it says, this has been pulled because you're trying to sell a human being or an animal. Like, no, I'm not. I'm trying to sell a book that has a picture of a human being on it. And usually when you submit it for review within, like, an hour or 2 hours, they throw it back, say, yeah, you're fine. But apparently Tom mentioned Tom 28mm miniature.
Yes. Fat Dragon Games, by the way, to see
how also is. The millimeter of a favorite gun bullet. And
I don't even know the 28mm.
Yeah. 28mm. And he, it got flagged. And he got banned and he had the ban overturned after a few hours, but yeah, look, if you're not on MeWe, get on MeWe. I don't post on MeWe as much as I really should. I don't post at all on MeWe, but I have a MeWe account because you know what? It's always good to have a backup because Facebook's getting nuts now. I mean, they will not hire human beings to do vetting, and if they're going to rely on AI and algorithms, they're going to someday you're going to get banned for nothing for just for saying that. You're going to gun the motor on your car. They're going to say, oh, you mentioned guns. And
damn it, Mike, you've probably already gotten this podcast banned. Oh, God. Gun, damn it.
You know, are you going to talk about your 7.62mm miniatures? And they're going to say, oh, that's a gun. Yeah. So anyway, just be careful because Facebook is not your friend nowadays.
Yeah. I have to remember too. It was Tom Tullis, and he probably should be banned.
Tom Tullis should have been banned for any number of things. Over
by the way,
years,
that's another guest we should bring on the show. Although we might suffer a banning for bringing him on the show, but Tom would be censor him.
Yeah. Gosh. Yeah, he might break the algorithm of anything.
He'd be like, oh my, you can't talk about it. He wasn't really talking about what you think he was talking about.
He runs a great miniature company and he posts the memes that would get your mom would ground you if you posted those memes, put it that way.
In a heartbeat.
Because they're
child in a heartbeat.
They're too extreme for even me. Sometimes I see it like, what the hell? Oh, there must be a Tom. Yep, Tom Tullis posted that. Yep, because that's the taste, and that is so bad I can taste it from here. It's awful.
Yeah, we have to tell Tom, you made the podcast.
Yes. We're gonna get Tom. Tom's another one that we can probably get on here because he loves us. He loves to hear himself talk, so he'll be great.
Oh God, you won't be able to shut him up. But he's good people, and If he rubbed you the wrong way, it's probably because he walked up behind you.
But we have potential guests, or we have guests for the next two shows, which would be great because Eric and I are tired of talking just to each other all the time.
Nice.
We don't know this, but or maybe you do know it. We're extremely lazy. We just soon get on here and let some guests talk the whole time and just sit back and just like, yeah, you just talk.
It's like Pex with us at the gaming booth with Pex and Ryan. And we'll just, Pex,
yeah, whatever.
We're going to be talking our gaming shit and clans and stuff. You just keep on selling those books. We'll wait for people.
Do we cover everything this? Do we have anything else we need to cover of all the items we had?
I think we covered it all, man. I do think we did a pretty good job.
It seemed like we missed something we were talked about.
Oh, we always miss something because here's the thing. There's so much going on in industry, but some of it reaches like tier one and very little reaches tier two. And a lot reaches tier three, and usually tier three you kind of go.
So when is your your Joe the Lawyer. We can talk about Joe the Lawyer show next week. Then you're going to do your.
Well, I'm going to bring Joe in next week, and then that Friday, Joe and I should be kicking off the new podcast, which will be on the same feed. So if you're listening to Talking Crit, which is every Wednesday, hopefully you're also listening to the mainstream, the Tavern Chat podcast.
You got to listen. Tavern Chat podcast is great because it's so cool because it's so. Every day you come up with another one. So if you, I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in that one. You're bound to hit three or four a week that you're like, I got to listen to that one.
And I like to keep short. I've heard people go, I don't like the podcast because I can't always listen for 30 minutes. Well, first off, if you're listening to this, obviously that's not your problem. Mike and I are usually lucky to get out of here in 90. But when I'm doing Tavern Chat, and it's just, me, if I'm not doing a fireside with an interview, 10 to 15 minutes generally tops. And I think that's the sweet point. If you have a short commute to work or you're going to go for a short walk, pop it in. You're not stuck for a long time. I could obviously do a weekly podcast and talk longer, but I'd rather do daily and keep them shorter. And of course we do Gamers Health. That comes out on Friday nights. That's Rachel and myself. So the game plan is with Joe and I, second and fourth Fridays, we're going to record Friday night on this YouTube and Facebook stream, and then I'll put it up on Saturdays. So there you go.
Great. Well, next week we will be here with Joe the Lawyer, and if he doesn't show up, we'll sue him, and we'll hire another lawyer to Joe the Lawyer.
Joe, just so you know, we have lawyers that we also know. So, yes, we can have our lawyers speak to Joe the Lawyer.
Joe's a great guy. He's been in the gaming circles for a long time. I don't think I've ever talked to him personally, so this will be fun for me. I've talked to him a lot online, and he used to have a blog that I read religiously. Does he still do his blog or not?
I don't think so. He does an occasional podcast.
He did it for quite a few years back.
His blog, Joe the Lawyer's Wondrous Imaginings.
It was a great blog. Yeah, great blog.
My three, and we could probably do this as a whole, talk, but my three initial blogs when I came into the OSR, Grognardia, obviously, James Mao, Rob Conley's Bat in the Attic.
Uh-huh, great one.
And Joe the Lawyer's Wondrous Imaginings. Those were the three that really secured me in the OSR. Chicago Wiz had a blog out back then. I would read that pretty regularly. Those were my top tier, the ones that I went to. Oh, my God, look, Joe has another one out. I got to read it. Or, oh, look, more. And then I found things at Gothridge Manor and stuff like that. And, it just exploded. But then a lot of the bloggers have moved on to podcasting, too. Mm-hmm. So
we had a whole show about that, The way back 10 years ago when the blogs were king, man. That was Jeff Rantz had his blog. Remember that? And hell, Zach Smith had a blog. They hit it with my axe or whatever. I mean, those were huge. The blogosphere was gigantic. Now, of course, podcasts where everybody went to, but yeah, the blog stuff was huge back then. That's how I kind of got into this whole, hey, there's other people out there playing D&D and writing stuff about, And that's where I first saw Eric's stuff too, because Eric had a blog back then. That's how I caught his stuff.
I still do.
You had a police blog back then. You remember that?
It's still up there. Saturday Night Special with
Night Saturday Special. I forgot all about that. Yeah,
Night spelled as your medieval knight with a K, And .blogspot.com. I haven't updated it in years, but I'm still proud of what I wrote there. Some really good real-world experiences of a rookie cop. So catch up on it. Good stuff. All right, folks. Mike and I have already touched upon COVID, so we're not going to, you know, beat you to death. But common sense, use it.
Wear your mask. Small in position. Very small thing to do.
And as always, be safe, be well. God bless. Roll those dice. Roll them well. If you want to. By the way, I almost forgot. I'm not pimping this. I don't make money off it at all, but they come in assorted colors.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was
there we go. That's what we almost forgot.
Yes.
So these dice, and that's the purple ones. Here's the blue ones. If I can get this in the front of the camera.
Oh, whoa. Hold on.
Oh, whoa. I just blocked you all out. There. Well, they're there gray, but they're really blue. These dice are available at Dollar Tree. I believe it's RPG dice.
Are they a dollar?
They are a dollar a set.
You cannot beat that.
It's a set of seven dice. Now, here's the deal. If you have it delivered to the store, delivery is free. If you have it delivered to your house, there is a cost to ship them. I think the cost to ship these were like, I don't know, $8 or something like that. I got 24. So I have 24 sets of dice. If you've gamed with me at conventions, you know I like to give shit away. So when we finally start doing face-to-face conventions, I will have dice to bring with me. But at a dollar set, I mean, you can't go wrong. Show Dollar Tree that we're worth it, because maybe we'll get some dollar minis and shit pre-painted. There you go. Maybe we'll get D&D books in the dollar book bin.
Ooh, Tasha's whatever, yeah, whatever Tasha's, the hell might be in there for a dollar.
Tasha's vile bag of shit. Could be in the dollar, you know. We didn't even. This is stuff that that was rejected by the Dungeon Guild, but we're gonna throw it into a book and sell it to you. So, see.
All right, folks. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We are out of here. Laters.
Later, folks.